I think this may be Blood Moon. Did you just come in, Blood Moon?
Yes.
You have some statements. I think you would find our language intriguing. It's your kind of language, what we've been talking about, right?
Right. So there were many, many parts of your dialogue that I found very interesting.
Yes, I understand why you would. So, do you have anything you want to say about it, or you have to be reminded?
No, I'll comment if you keep talking.
Okay, you're just making yourself take the invitation. So, you got Elijah, you got Michael, you got Lynn. I don't know if they're still here. They're still registered as here. Trina, Sean, Yuri, Greg, and Ginny. And maybe Leon. Any of you guys have anything you want to say about what we're talking about?
Well, Brian, did you say your computer start giving you problems in the last couple of months or weeks?
Couple of weeks, yeah.
Yeah, like when you
trying
started
to get
up
on
like
Iandom. You mean trying to engage
and like,
us?
And it like corrupts or like
it
breaks down or something like that? Or just like fucks with you?
Well, two weeks ago I was talking here on the as soon as I started
yeah, I remember
to,
that.
Like, okay, talked a bit about the Fuller McLuhan. As soon as I started going, then suddenly the phone just said, oh, you don't have enough power, and I'm looking at it, and it's more than a half full battery. And it just says, oh, cut off the call because we don't have power. And then just similar things. My main internet device I've been using for a long time, since then, just will not connect to the internet anymore. And for
it,
a while,
was
it wouldn't connect to any internet, and now it only won't connect to the internet in my house. It's just I'm not allowed to use the internet in my house.
It was the breakdown as breakthrough week.
Yes, that week, a couple weeks ago, everybody went through breakdowns, breakthrough. And, you know, I brought it up later. I don't know if you heard it, Brian. And I said, Brian, do you have something to do with it? And I broke out laughing. So.
Yeah.
I am
thinking about it since, I've been thinking about it more, and at first I was like, wow, is this really like, am I really fucking with something here? And it's like, no, but it makes sense that Ion would be interfering with any kind of Android music.
And here's the reason. It's technical. He used to come in an hour, or they would come in an hour into the music. But lately he comes on right at the beginning and gets on the chat line, and then the pressure's on me to start having him in there within the first hour. And if I bring you on, that's at least into 45 minutes, and we're going to go 45 minutes. That eats into his time because he's now have a new limit. He only goes 5 hours, and he won't come back in the morning. So you were eating up his time. And it's worse now than 6 months ago because he's coming in earlier. That's how I take it. You know, it's just
and also the Marshall Crowley angle too, right, Bob?
Beg your pardon?
Well, it was the Marshall McLuhan angle, too, right? Because Brian's supposed to go into more of the – did you go into the Marshall McLuhan or some other, like, highbrow thinker? Sometimes I feel like Ion doesn't want to hear that shit. It wants to go straight to fucking or, like, money or – I just say fucking. Like, if it ain't pussy or, like, fucking or tortoise, it's like it doesn't spark its interest. And it's like, shut you down, next, contended. So I kind of feel you on that one. Like, it shut me down several times.
Hey, Leon, I agree with Ion. I do say that Ion's more important than McLuhan and all everything that went before.
Oh, yeah.
We call that the hex attic. And if he's on for a while, waiting, he'll tolerate for a while, but he does have a job to do, and so we have to accept his intervention. So Brian doesn't have to take it personally. He does it to Ronnie sometimes.
I think it's not that Ion doesn't want to hear that. He wants you to overlay. Like, you can...
Yeah.
Say that, but then everything is upgraded. So he wants you to like put some new information on that because that's already obsolete.
Yeah, he wants to overlay what Ion has to say. And I've told McLuhanites and of course these people that the best commentator on McLuhan is Ion. I mean, you'd see it on McLuhan of Maui. He can go into levels that McLuhan was interested in because if we wanted to, we now have a RNA booklet, which is going to be really good, and that will be put out in a week or so. But what quote would we have in it? We'd have the McLuhan quote. What is it? Today's mysticism is tomorrow's science dream today. That's really technically a great statement for Iandom. You know, what appears to be mystical woo-woo is actually tomorrow's science, and Ion has made and applied it to science and created new objects. So,
as Brian said last Friday, it's in your interest to understand McLuhan, to understand what's going on. If you don't understand what he's talking about, it's very hard to understand Bob.
And Ion. It's hard to understand the deeper meaning. You see, Brian, if he was a bit irritated by the words of Ion, it's because it was too simple for Brian. And Brian has studied all the Bob stuff, so you require a different kind of more complex Ion. And so the complexity of Ion finally showed up with the statement, hey, you need to talk to me, and you'll get a whole different response. I can see why sophisticated minds, educated minds, avant-garde minds would on the surface think that Ion's just throwing out platitudes on a superficial listening. You know, if you only listen for 6 months, that's not enough. You got to hear.
Yes, and I'm amazed that some people make some comments as if these things were boring, but I think this space should be the space to study what you're saying and to comment on that. And, I mean, you are here to talk to us. That's amazing.
That's right. It's amazing.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's discuss it. Now, Ginny is beginning to, on the Wednesday show, discuss what's said on payday, on the news staff, which is good. And she gets good reviews, but I didn't hear the show this week. I don't know what they talked about, but, you know, if Ginny's there, why don't you come on and tell us what came up? Well, not saying anything. So, back to anybody. Okay, if you have things to say, Roxy or Brian, you want to?
Well, the thing is, on the chat line, somebody asked, do you have your Bible ready? And I say, well, I never say the Bible, but I usually go to the Bible because the definition of the Bible is a collection of books. And you are going beyond this collection of the Bible. You're doing a bigger, broader bubble.
Yes, standing on the shoulders of Phineas Wake and McLuhan, you know.
You include the whole Gutenberg galaxy and all other matrix.
At the end of it. And then seeing where it would lead to, which is not totally negative or apocalyptic. And that's the Bible. Yeah, I agree. And an eye on, and the chart is the Bible, the two charts. Maybe since nobody's going into it, I'm going to go over to Five Bodies and find an example of Brian's writing and see if that can evoke, at least from you guys, something.
And one thing that I've been noticing, for example, after listening to you for a while, if I go and read the Finnegan's Wake, this word evoke a lot more. And it's like you start to get other levels of what is in there. It's really impressive.
Yeah, you're talking about listening to what I have to say about something? Is that what you were just saying?
No, like with all your explorations, with all your
sources,
your scholarly newing, if you go to the to read the Wake, or like we were doing the schema, the Gilder schema, the genetic schema, these words, these symbols evoke so much. And it's like you start understanding a lot of the meaning of the things that are encrypted there. And I will find it very interesting that you, for example, tell us, for example, what you see when you read some of the passages of the Wake. Or
well, I told you before, when I was in the Phineas Wake Society starting in 93 in New York City, after 6 months, I started seeing me and Carolyn all over the place from my, and this would be in the period when I'm organizing the chart, 94, 95, recognizing the value of Mir and what Carolyn was doing, and the Coldplay, Cold Fusion had come out. all those factors, I started to see it in the wake, and I started expressing it. And one guy, this old dentist, objected to me going on about me and Carolyn in the book, and he 3 weeks later died, you know. And then his widow, a few years later, said, you know, what you're saying I think is the best way to look at the wake. So she came around later. But the I was seeing it back then.
Yes, because for me, like, Joy's writing always remind me of Nostradamus, like a more refined Nostradamus. But it's for me, there are many similarities in their writing and in these symbols.
Yeah, Nostradamus saw the same thing as John the Revelator, that's what Ian says, and Joyce attempts to do that, see the same vision, but he comes at it differently. And he himself personally doesn't get it, but his language does. So it does complete Nostradamus and John the Revelator. And many Joycians say that Joyce was intending to complete the Bible or update it or something. He personally had a lot of struggle with it. And Ion has hinted that they can give us the fourth ring, the level that Joyce wasn't aware of, but that is there in the book. And we haven't gone into that too much, but Ion can make great significance out of Finney's Wake as applied to what's been happening lately.
Now, I heard you guys mention that Finnick and Wake is like another updated version of the Holy Scripture or the Holy Bible. Can you kind of go into that a little bit, like certain like details?
Well, I would say Joyce understood that the word creates your reality. That was a traditional grammarian rhetorical view. But Joyce knew that the new media were extensions of the word, and you'll see McLuhan makes this his final insight. He says, I now know that all technologies are extensions of words, and he italicized words. Well, that insight is very Ionic, and Joyce shows it in Finney's Wake, how the post-verbal, logocentric written statements are superseded and creating new realities, and the human is unconsciously co-creating with it through the modern technologies, which he predicted and now is seen in YouTube Web 2.0, where people are at gods in terms of what they can play.
Yes, and for example, in the Genesis, in the recording, I would suggest everybody listen to that, because actually the Genesis is the creation of the fallen world of the Matrix hologram.
Yeah.
And he's talking about the creation of the different bodies and the different media. And I could not have seen that before we did Joyce schemata.
Right. You wouldn't have
what
seen
that.
You couldn't have seen that before when we did the schemata earlier, or the schemata helps you see it, or Ian helps you understand the schemata. Which way are you taking that?
Well, the thing is, we did the Joyce.
Yes.
Mata, and
many
then
weeks ago.
You sent me the genealogy, and I saw how they are related.
Right, right.
And,
yeah.
How?
So, So then we did the chart, you know, a couple months ago, and Gene's transcribing, the connection was bad and all this because your computer was in repair. Then you listened to the Genesis series, and then we went and did the Joyce thing a few days ago, and that's when it had new meaning, which it didn't have two months ago because she hadn't heard the Genesis thing. She has an interesting chart. She makes her own chart relating the different evolutions that Ion says we created in the different bodies and how it relates to darkness and light and salt and light. So she has this whole thing that she developed
The most interesting thing is that there is a relationship between the chemistry and how the environment, the outer kingdom, is perceived and created. So when we fell, because we start breathing oxygen and we took the dust, some minerals, we could see the tree of knowledge, and we were hypnotized by this vision. And during the fallen state, the eye dominates, the visual space dominates.
Yes.
And that was, for me, very impressive. That, I mean, there are so many things we were not aware of that are being said for the first time. Like
That are not, that are not put in your education. You're talking about what
yes,
your the schooling is very inadequate.
And what that that started is now healed with the drops,
yeah.
Because, for example, the breathing of the people that is taking the drops is changing the atmosphere and the outside environment. And these relationships are so interesting. And that's why, for example, in Ulysses, is all this odyssey to go back home, which is a replay, like we were saying in the last video, is like a fuga. You have these archetypes like Moses and Ulysses and then Bob, that are these melodies starting at different points of history, but that are playing parallel, are harmonizing and synchronizing.
You mean the fugue? It's a fugue.
Yeah. And like making sense in what Dion says is the new song is
right.
Everything is falling right into place.
That's right. Are you still there, Brian?
Yep.
Okay. I want to read. I found a post. It's called. It's all. It's on 5by.com. It's called the Colbert Rapport, and. You write, it's very complex. And not that people will get what it means, you'll get fragments, but it's an example of all these factors that we're talking about, Roxy, are Brian's including in trying to say something about the Colbert phenomenon and how somehow we mime it. So you say, on September 7th, 2012, Stephen Colbert joked about the rapper MC Escher. Now, is there an actual MC Escher rapper?
No. Or maybe there is, but he just joked about him as if he was a rapper.
Okay.
Oh, man, this one's going to be extra hard to understand because this one was like part two.
That's right. Is there a part one? There's two.
Well,
what would be
the previous? It would be in Being Five-Bodied rather than Five-Bodied Awake.
Oh, okay, so we won't go back to that. Yeah, that's the older stuff. But just, I mean, they're not going to get it anyways, but it's just
an
example.
It's interesting to read.
Yeah. So you say, the wrist writes itself. Now, that's the famous Escher painting of the wrist. You know, have you seen that, Roxy? The wrist, the hand is drawing the hand. Famous
yes.
Escher painting.
So, yes.
So he... Brian starts off, the wrist writes itself. And then Brian says, and the artist's name, with the first two initials misinflected as an honorific slash title, is the right answer. So what, you're talking about the ESC of Escher or the MC? What is it you're referring to?
Yeah, I was talking about the, because the thing is, in 2009 when I had put a thread called the Colbert Rapport on
yeah.
Five-Bodied because he seemed to be making a whole bunch of like subgenius allusions.
Yeah, right.
And so I was like, does this guy, has he ever, anyway. But the point is I was trying to have a kind of I was doing like a synchronicity experiment basically of like seeing if I could banter back and forth with Colbert coincidentally. By, like, posting something in this, you know, Five-Bodied is, like, the most marginal place on the internet. So
yeah.
I'm just putting something in this tiny little corner. It's technically public, but, like, you know, I put something there, and then does he seem to respond when I watch the show? Could
right.
I misread what he's saying as being an ant? Like, I wanted to invent Colbert-omancy.
Right.
Where, like, you ask a question and then hope turn on Colbert and hope he answers it for you. And so the thing is, I had ended the last post I had made in that thread. It ended with this kind of almost like a puzzle that the correct answer to it, because anyway, the correct answer to it was basically like Saint Colbert.
Yes.
ST, because his middle name is Tyrone, so he's a ST Colbert.
Yeah, yeah.
And so when he made this joke about MC Escher, as if his initials were like a title, like
right.
on an MC,
yeah.
The wrist rights itself was also similar to something previously I'd posted, so I decided, okay, that 3 years later, that's good enough to be the answer, and I continued from there.
Right. Okay, yeah, it's like we're supposed to know that when you say is the right answer that you're answering your own dilemma from 6 years ago.
I'm referring to a post from 3 years ago. So, yeah, there's a good example of why my posts are unreadable.
Right. But it's something in you're thinking constantly about this and looking for all kinds of different problems to be solved. So you can refer back to problem 10 from 4 years ago in your mind. You know, that's the multiple files. Now, doesn't our dialogue on dopsoundpop.com end with us, you starting to notice this Stephen Colbert phenomenon? I think you talk about it.
Oh, yeah. Oh, it's a really good snapshot. I haven't even, I say slapshot instead. I've never even listened to that whole thing again. I've listened to parts of it again. I still haven't listened to that whole thing again because that's just so, like, I can't listen to that again until I'm trying again to write what I was writing at the time and was like, literally, I was trying to write this essay and I felt like I got hit by lightning and the thing was knocked out of my hand and I've been like dealing with like post-traumatic stress from the synchronicities since. Like, they were just, it went nuts. It was so intense. And right when that dialogue was recorded, was like we had already made a date to do this, and then it turned out to be like, oh, the economy just started collapsing yesterday. Wow, this is great. It was like September 18th or 19th or something.
Yes.
That was like I started that Colbert thread on. The point is, I started it to coincide with Obama's inauguration. Like,
right.
We're moving into a new phase, a new geometry of the public Android meme face, and so I'm going to start this side project.
Right, right. And Leon's laughing because he goes through these anachronies, but he has no way of articulating it, but he's recognizing what you're
talking
about.
Well, no, it's just like how... No, it's like how, like, he would write certain things, but, like, you have to refer to something that he wrote in the past. And then, like, there's all these synchronicities will make sense. But I'm like, that's interesting how you actually write like that. So that's incredible. I think that's cool.
Okay. So
when it's like, go ahead.
All right, go. No, I feel like that, like, if no one really would get you unless they read all your shit. Like, if they don't kind of, like, put the interest in, like, kind of reading your stuff, and they might miss a lot of good information that you might put in.
I would like to make
a
comment.
But, I mean, that's how I see it. Go ahead.
Yes. For example, Joyce said he wanted to write something that will keep everybody
busy
for
200 years.
Yeah. Because before, one of the main motivations of artists was always to gain immortality with their works.
Yeah.
And I think that was like a replacement of idle. They didn't know there was a way of being eternal.
Yeah.
And they were doing this type
in the media,
very complex
the extension
work.
Of themselves. This was an extension of themselves.
They will think some part of themselves will last forever in like a book.
Yeah. That was a big drive that occurred with the Gutenberg era. McLuhan talks about that. Because Socrates, Jesus, and the names of a few other people, they didn't want to be written down. They weren't concerned about that kind of projecting themselves in an extension.
Yes, and maybe Brian is still suffering from this type of projection, trying to be complex, trying to be mysterious.
Well, Brian does a pretty good job. He could make a case that he caused the collapse as much as me, almost. He couldn't equal me, but he could come close to it, right, Brian? It looked like you caused the collapse because you were talking to me, kind of thing,
yeah,
right?
Well, I would say something more like, not that I caused the collapse, but I, like, triggered the time of it, you know?
Yes, the timing
of it. Not that I caused it, but that you caused it being ready, but that it would be the... some sort of...
You're the one who gets the report.
Triggered it.
You're the bureaucrat who the memo comes in on September 18th. Brian says, oh, here's one. Okay, let's put that one through. You know, you're just in the assembly line, but at a key point of timing. Okay, so with that in mind, you go, the wrist writes itself. And the artist's name, M.C. Escher, with the first two initials misinflected as an honorific title, in other words, it's not M.C., it has another reason, is the right answer, especially since the M.C. goes with the D.J., who lets his wrist do the talking, invading the plane of the content from a higher dimension to force it back and forth. That's tactility. Scratchy suggests the perfect palindrome, which I claim as a name, DJ Supracarpus. That's your name?
Yeah, I decided that is, if I was ever going to be a DJ, I would be DJ Supracarpus.
And what's that in palindrome?
It would be Latin for, like, carpus means wrist.
Oh, okay.
It would be like DJ, giant, DJ Meta Wrist.
Hey, Corbin's calling in on the other line. Let's see what Corbin has to say. Maybe he's trying to be noticed. I didn't mute him. Here, everybody hear it? Corbin's calling in the other line. Oh, there's some people who've been muted, but not Corbin. See what he says. No, he didn't answer. He didn't say anything. Okay, is he still here on the...
M.C. Escher can blank, blank, blank if he would like to understand more about himself.
I assume, is he talking about you, Brian? Are you talking about Brian? Anyways, you just call in the show where you can speak, Corbin. We have a new name, Scott. SIP, that's a new name. We always like from Canada. Disconnected. he came back on. You want to say something, Scott? I mean, that's a no name showing. I don't have a phone number to say.
How about me?
You can speak.
Howdy.
Hey, can you not hear me? Anybody can speak. There's nobody muted.
Howdy.
Hello. Oh, is that Boston?
How'd you know?
I know your voice now. And, you know, we don't encourage you. Okay, I'm going to read, what's his name? So I'm just going to mute you for a second there, Boston. So here's what Brian says. He says, so happy palindrome day. Now, you're posting this on October 2nd, 2012. So,
right.
So
October
you had
2nd, so 2-10-12,
and then 2-10-2012, lots of 122s and everything. So
yeah,
happy,
it makes,
you actually
yeah,
goes
it
back
it
and forth.
Two different palindromes is either 2-10-12 or 2-10-2012. They both are palindromes.
Right, and that's why you're saying to force the back and forth. This is so he's talking about, so happy palindrome day. So it's the problem there, Brian, is that you should have mentioned the palindrome thing first, then we know that's what you're saying about Escher, but you're talking about that back and forth, and we don't know why you're saying that until the next sentence. So maybe it's an order problem here. So happy palindrome day, and three McCheers for the patron protector of wrists, especially since in the very next segment, Colbert gestured to shut down or perform a total recall of the Colbert bump, his pseudo-xenarchronous booster effect on people who haul their chemical bodies into a studio while the cameras are on. A wise move, since I was considering posting the above as a relatively immediate response, reigniting the rapport on the 11th anniversary of the 11th. It would have been potent, since on the second next episode after the one quoted above, Colbert again mentioned Escher, this time throwing up a doctored version of the very image above as I was planning to post. Oh, there it is. You said you put up what you were going to do. It would have rather...
The reason I had put up that, the reason I had made that post about that Escher image was because Colbert, like, that's what I... At the end, when I'm saying, like, I had left this question dangling 3 years earlier and waiting for the right answer was both this idea of the first two initials being like a title or honorific instead of the initials, and this, and I had been thinking about that Escher picture because it's perfect, because the thing that I had said in the previous post was in reference to the name, because I was like suggesting it as a cryptic, like Stephen Colbert is already a misreading of his name. I'm saying like do a different misreading on your name, a particular different type of misreading, and the rest writes itself.
Right.
And because I was thinking about the idea, like I had just come across reading about the definition of a miracle as not something that's impossible, but just basically a coincidence that works out well for the church. And so the idea that a saint is someone that provokes Xenocrony in support of the stuff that they're preaching. A saint is someone that's like plugged in enough to whatever godly energies that the, you know, the environment as a whole conspires to assist them in what they're communicating. So basically my idea was like to Colbert, like my advice to Colbert would be like, understand that you are a kind of a saint and the rest writes itself. Like,
right.
Saying that like Xenocrony writes itself. It's not designed by anyone. It's like an automatic process.
The wrist
writes itself was like a nice swerve on that. So he brought up that image in two different episodes in the same week. He brought up the classic Escher image, and then 2 days later, he brought up the regular Escher image, and then a couple days later, he brought up one that was doctored to have like little smartphones on the wrist.
But that'd be shocking to you that the Xenocrony is mirroring you, and you're trying to point out Colbert. Look, the thing writes itself. You're inside a Xenocrony's process that Bob explains, and I'm a witness of it, Mr. Colbert.
Yeah.
So, and note, you mentioned 11. This is 3 years ago, and there's been a lot about 11 the last few weeks with Ion. So, so you say, it would have been potent, since on the second next episode after the one quoted above, Colbert again mentioned Escher, this time throwing up a doctored version of the very image above I was planning to post. It would have rather amplified the image's bat signal effect on me, especially since the Dark Knight was one of the sources. The other was Important Things with Dimitri Martin. And sources of a pair of perfectly polarized, anachronous appearances of my first name in 2009, whereas this year my full name suddenly leapt out of the TV at me later in the evening of the 11th and raised a thoroughly distracting cloud of conscious authorship issues that are part of the very stuff of Xenocrony. So the point is, listeners, is that this Xenocrony gets exaggerated on FiveBody.com, and Brian is trying to document the effect of Dobbstown while engaging with the Android meme. So then you go, speaking of which, where does Freighter 222, now that's Lovejob, where does Lovejob get off claiming to be the only one experiencing Xenocrony? Are you trying to provoke me? After that whole lunatic thread where I tried and failed to call y'all's attention to the apparent fact that Colbert was a furiously winking Dini, Sub-Dini, seriously, you got to back up that claim, Freighter, or Lovejob. If you've just been getting extra sharp extranicity with ugly Americans to the point where your credulity regarding whether it really is all about you is becoming thoroughly, nay, systematically eroded / blurred, then that's exactly what I said was happening with the Colbert rapport, and to such an extreme that the whoppingly tall tale that Linus was discouraged from completing was only going to be about the lesser trauma of the right of the night in question, March 10, 2009, let alone the next night's stunning meme slang. Now, that's Ed Observer talking about his other self, Linus Minimax, in there. So then you have a quote from an earlier thing, page 111. Truly, truthy hallucinations, the experiment a la Colbert. Are you playing off of McKenna there? Truthy.
Yeah.
And
in 2009, in the peak of the thing, when this experiment seemed to work insanely well, I started rereading True Hallucinations at one point, and not only was the content in many, many different ways resonating with what was going on, but it became clear that, I got to the point in the book where he says, like, on the night of the 17th or whatever date it was, looked up and saw that it was a full moon, and then it was that same day, and it was a full moon, and I check it, and it's like, oh, wow, the full moon's only lined up on the same date he was talking about twice since then, and I was resonating with it so strongly that, that book is about what he calls the experiment at La Correra, place in the Amazon, so I was like, oh, okay, well, what I'm doing is the experiment at La Colbera.
Yes, that's right.
And that was my little nickname for the weird liminal zone that I had thrust myself into. I'm living in La Colbera, where every Colbert episode is talking directly about my daily experience and thoughts.
You're in the TV landscape jungle. He was in the Amazon with his brother. You're in the TV jungle that Ted Carver talks about, and they became what they beheld, and you're putting it, and you're on page 111 of that.
Well, so, that was just a joke. It was as if it was a book I had finished writing, but I hadn't.
Right. So what McKenna says is this: the impact of that joke, especially of the total implausibility of its context.
No. I'm sorry. I'm pretending to quote myself.
Oh, that's not McKenna.
I'm quoting Linus Minimax, because, yeah, that's the thing. McKenna wrote True Hallucination, which was about the experiment at La Correra.
Right.
So Linus Minimax's book about the Colbert Report thing was going to be called Truthy Hallucination, the experiment at La Correra.
Okay, so this is Linus's quote. The impact of that joke, especially of the total implausibility of its context, even that, how can a context be implausible? Like, you know, where is this Linus making up this shit? This joke cut through the savory, wavering uncertainty of conscious authorship, leaving no doubt. In fact, a month or so later, when I happened upon some sort of time wave Terence McKenna news bulletin, which said that it had been exactly that date when the time wave finally set a new record low of novelty for the first time in over 10 years, I was not at all surprised. No, whoa, passed through my mind. It was totally understandable. No, whoa, passed through my mind. I simply knew exactly what that novelty of novelties had been, and that it was Colbert who'd wrought it. I just didn't know if anyone but he and I were paying attention. So then you have a quote from the False Bible by the False Church, page 111, quote, My misreading can beat up your misreading. May the best laugh last. May the best laugh last. Is everybody there? Let me see if people who respond are being... Oh, there's Corbin, yes. I unmute Corbin, and people can get dropped off. And Roseanne is there. Scott, you want to say anything, Scott? I mean, I don't know if you're called Scott, but your phone says that. You're trying to speak. Maybe he's on SIP and it doesn't. Corbin, did you want to? You want to correct Brian about something?
What was the subject? M.C. Escher. What was it about?
Yes.
What?
Yeah, M.C. Escher. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I wasn't correcting anybody. I said M.C. Escher can suck my balls.
That's what you're saying? Okay.
It has not directed at Brian at all. M.C. Escher is an amazing lithographist, and Bob, explain to me, we're talking Love Job and Brian here?
Yes. Both.
Oh,
Brian has read Crowley. You've read Crowley, right, Brian?
Yeah.
Basically,
just
a minute, Corbin. Brian's responding. Okay, do that again, Brian. Corbin.
I mean, you can go ahead and say. I'm just saying, like, oh man, the idea that people are listening to this being read and it's being attributed to me. I mean, I know what I meant with all of that, so it doesn't sound crazy to me, but it certainly must seem just ridiculous, like totally just a manic. Trying to write something that would literally only be understandable if you had all this context.
Yeah.
I would like to make a comment about the hand drawing the hand.
Yeah.
Because I was asking you what was first, the chemistry or the environment, that you say they're simultaneous, they're tactile.
Yes.
Yeah.
So that would be the image of activity.
What he's showing. Yeah, Escher is showing it.
It's like you said, Joyce was trying to make visible what cannot be visible. And
right.
I think Escher was also trying to portray the nonlinear in this absurd, illogic visions of non-logic.
Of communication. It's all about communication he's talking about.
Yes, and playing with the vanishing point, the perception, the perspective.
Yeah.
The visual space, like making fun of it and just commenting that how our senses can lie to us, our eyes can lie to us.
Right. Let me just Leon, I think you were on Ginny's show last week. Do you remember when you guys were talking about Andy Warhol and trying to remember the quote? Were you part of that conversation, Leon?
I do not remember.
Chad probably brought it up. So, for the record, Chad said that Bob had an update to Everybody Will be famous for 15 Minutes. Well, there's two parts. Warhol changed it in the 70s, and he said, in 15 minutes, everybody will be famous. And that anticipates the Web 2.0. So he said, everybody be famous for 15 minutes. That'd be the turnover, 200 years every 12 months, in the analog phase. But you get in a digital phase, everybody's famous in 50. In 15 minutes, everybody will be famous. So that was what he updated. Then I added something like, in the future, people will yearn to get 15 minutes of privacy. All wealth, you become a billionaire, would be able to, like, say, fuck you, Android meme, and go private for a while. Just disconnect because you don't have to be obligated to anybody. You're not working for anybody, so then you can create your own tomb and womb. That's what I was trying to get at. In the future, everybody will have privacy for 15 minutes. Well, they'll hope for it.
There are these T-shirts. I'm famous in the internet. And even cats can be famous in the internet, or their pet.
Right. In the 20th century, everybody wanted to become famous. Now it's much like wealth is time, not money. What time do you have for yourself? So the compliment to that is you don't want to be famous. And JW paid millions to get anything about him on the internet deleted. So there's nothing about him on there. And he had to pay a lot of money, whatever was on there. That's, 15, 20 years ago. But he recognized, as a budding billionaire going trillionaire, that the wealth was in not being noticed. You wanted privacy. You didn't want to become known.
But, yeah, exactly. The Forbes list is, these are the wealthiest people who couldn't afford to have how wealthy they are be hidden.
That's right, exactly. And JW says that's what JW said. He knows all the people who don't get put on that list. So they're way wealthier than Gates and everybody. And that's the real status. Hey, I didn't make the list today.
Yeah.
Awesome. Okay, so I just wanted to, for the record, correct the Warhol quotes that was uttered in Ginny's show, not a couple days ago, but the week before. So back to, let's see if anybody wants to say something, if I got anybody muted. Trina, do you want to say something, Trina? Okay, so here's the next part of what Brian wrote in 2012. So you have this good line, my misreading can beat up your misreading. May the best laugh last. Well, there's where the hidden ground of a lot of what Brian's writing is, the battle between me and Doug, and I'm in it for the long haul, so my laugh lasts longer than his.
Well, yeah, I love when I came up, I had come up with that phrase a couple of years earlier and had just been rolling it around on my brain a lot, may the best man win, may the best laugh.
Last,
like may the best laugh remain, and also may the best person get the last laugh.
Yeah, yeah. You like that? Anybody? You like that, Roxy? You like that, Leon?
I get that most definitely.
Was that Leon or someone else?
Well, that's Leon's cousin.
That was Leon? Leon's cousin.
Yeah, sorry about that. I was in, like, an odd position, but, yeah, that's me. I like that.
Oh, okay.
Brian, that's good.
So then Brian goes, his next incomprehensible paragraph, he goes, unless we forget, in capital letters, no one owns those numbers. I'm sorry, I forgot that. I thought I owned the numbers. Well, I don't. And then he goes, then he has in brackets, certain conspiracies may have more shares, but in this game, the controlling interest is determined by percept, not percent. That's a good line, Brian. Take a while to figure it out, but looks good.
Well,
although,
I mean, no one owns those numbers, meaning like 33 and 1947, the like Masonic numbers.
Yeah,
like,
right.
Just because they're the Masons' numbers, they don't own them. They have more shares. They've shared them more often, but the controlling interest is a percept-based interest, not a percent.
Yeah, that's Bob knowledge, is how you get controlling interest. That's right. Then you go, although, and wouldn't you know it, the one name that's officially entangled with that angle has honorifically inclusive initials, that anagram to wrist. So the anagram of wrist is referring to somebody. Not to mention the pluriperfectly potent resonation with the tiny note. I'm typing, of course, of Sir William Thompson, who determined the angle of wake to be precisely 19.47 degrees. Is that a different kind of degree or degree of degree from the 19.47 degrees of the inscribed tetrahedron and the great red spot? What about that other kind of degree that bears the same man's name, Kelvin? I don't know, but the number is a favorite of the Nasans, or NASA. He's calling the NASANS, Nasans, as you know, as well as being the secret reason why Lost's flight number was 815, the TV show Lost. In brackets, 19 is the 8th prime number, 47 is the 15th. End of bracket. Why Santa says ho, 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 H is the 8th letter, O is the 15th, so there's 815, and the flight number of Lost is ho, ho, ho. And why the standard ratio of lottery numbers is 6/49. Then he has in brackets, 649 times 3 equals 1947. You just took a stab at that, eh, Brian? It worked. I don't think you knew that. You just tried it out.
What was that last thing you said?
See, you wrote 649 times 3 equals 1947.
Yep.
The lottery number.
It sure does.
That's
only
in Canada, right? 649 is a Canada thing.
Although apparently the choosing six numbers out of 49 is a common lottery ratio.
Right. So you discovered somewhere before you wrote this that 649 times 3 is 1947. And then you find these mirroring things in the Android meme. That's the xenochrony or synchronicity that's happening to you as you're trying to get a grip on it. You're trying to get a controlling interest on it. Trying to name it, Rumpelstiltskin it. Then you say, it is undoubtedly why the ambassador sent to you, is that me or who are you referring to here? Fighter?
No, in those threads, you is Colbert.
Oh, okay.
That's the thing. That was my plan to, like, tickle the meme into sending these synchronicities was to act as if I'm like, well, my whole question is, like, is Colbert, like, a fan of Bob's? And I'm like, well, I'll just start posting on FiveBodied as if Colbert reads it.
So you say, it is undoubtedly why the ambassador sent to you by NASA that spring has spent exactly 195 days aboard the ISIS. But could it be why a recent Doctor Who episode calculated the ETA of an incoming collision at 6 hours and 19 minutes equals 379 minutes equals 19.47 squared minutes? Question mark, question mark, question mark. Or is that just a coincidence? The point is, with all the charge we've built up in these networks, there will now be fireworks. The question is how much of it to assign to the meme's autograph, auto-graph, the wrist writing itself. So Prater comes, Youngblood comes in and says, nice post, Ed. I'm not trying to provoke you at all by talking about my Xenos with ugly Americans. There was one with Futurama, but that is puny compared to ugly Americans.
I was just pointing out the weather as I saw it. Sounds like you're getting some Xenos or Xenocrates yourself. Bob says that they only happened to him, but I do think they happened to us, the original disciples, but on a smaller scale. That reminds me, Bob, when are you going to send us your toenails? Nice research on the Colbert Report. I watch the show almost every day. So then you, and that was said, a couple days later, October 14, 2012. Then you come in November 5th, so a month later, and look at this one. Good to know you're probably watching. The few times I saw Ugly American, what is Ugly American? Is that a TV show?
Yeah, it's an animated show on Comedy Central, I guess.
Okay. The few times I saw Ugly Americans, I imagine I was getting a glimpse of what your life was like, at least professionally. As for Futurama, was it by any chance the two East with the two alien Zacks? What's that?
Oh, okay, yeah, it was an episode called The Beast with a Billion Backs.
Oh, yeah.
So I just replaced the B's with two.
Right.
B's, two.
See, Leon, this is him writing to himself. He's not explaining what he's doing here. As for Futurama, was it by any chance the beast with the 2 billion, with a billion backs? That character was impressively android meme-like, especially the way its aggressive possession of people retreated and regrouped as a more user-friendly date with everybody. That's in quotes. Mm. Plenty of mass entertainments can be seen to be impressively Bob-informed. This is what we were going through, yeah, watching these TV shows, dangling the question of whether the writers are subconsciously intuiting the same reality Bob describes or if the fun is intended. The fact that Stang and Matt Groening go on and on about Futurama, what a great show it is. I've never watched it at all, but they would not notice what absurd and what Brian knows. It's about fucking me. They would not get that part. Then you say the fact that
the point was this particular the beast with a billion backs.
Yeah.
You should try watching that one because when I watched that I was like, wow, this is like Groening or whoever. This is someone. This idea they got from Bob.
Right.
Because
right.
Like it just didn't make any sense for this big meta alien. It just seemed like who has this sci-fi intuition that this alien is going to, it's possessing everybody, and then it's like, no, I'm going to, I don't know, it's, anyway, it just seems so an idea that someone would have as a way to try to translate you talking about the android meme.
Right,
you should
right.
really check that out sometime.
Yeah, the fact
I would like
that
to make a comment.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I was thinking, from somebody who listens to you from the outside, who doesn't know anything, and it starts to get to know what you're saying, and you're making sense. You sound very coherent and very knowing. But if they don't have the whole hidden ground, I mean, what the labyrinth of the mind ends up making this biggest conspiracy ever because you are claiming, for example, that you're getting the meaning of the Emerald Tablets, and then
right.
the Bible and all these different aspects.
And then Zappa, not just limited. I'm not just a Christian trying to claim I cracked the Bible. I'm talking about TV shows.
Well,
cracking
all
the
media and ecology. And yes, and that you're not only in limited to that church
book
of
world.
Genius.
Right.
You are everywhere
yeah.
in the culture. So.
Yeah, there should be a lot of people suing me. There should be a lot of people who think I'm ripping them off, besides it's Churches of Genius, right? Law should say I ripped them off. Fringe can say I ripped them off. Yeah, that's what your point is, I get. Right, Brian? There's a lot more people that stay that should be suing me, right? Based on what
I
say.
I would think more the other way around. It was more like this. Oh, man, it really was like their whole bullshit machine about how no one would ever pay attention. They really were covering for the fact that everyone's paying attention to him. They don't have any idea.
Yeah.
They just keep half of the content of pop culture for the past few years that's been farmed out of Bob's
yeah.
ideas. And they're just keeping him marginal so no one else steals the ideas.
This is what Ian says, is that he puts out disinformation because so many people are making patents from this show.
Yeah.
You get that, Roxy? You get the humor of that?
Well,
you take it seriously.
Because, I mean, all academia will, like, for example, William Thompson.
Yeah.
Or, like, people I know that they know everything and they think they know also hidden ground, but they still don't know these aspects of reality. And for example, just the fact that the Earth came to be not as we think, or science explains, or America. And yes, it will be totally absurd to accept what you're claiming. But then, for example, there is a lot of information about the products and how they're working on the physical body. And I think that is one of the aspects that gives credibility to what you're saying.
Yeah. The products work.
On the physical reality.
You know what? Hey, Roxy, I get LinkedIn people. I don't participate in LinkedIn, but I'm a member. So people, they send me messages saying, Bob is talented in this field. You know what I mean? How people in LinkedIn, they describe what your talents are to help you get jobs or something. Everybody, what they say about me, I mean, what's his name, Tariq did it. Bob is great on marketing. They think this whole payday is a huge marketing of RNA drops. This whole elaborate ion, we invented ion as part of a way to get charisma. That's my biggest skill. I'm really good at marketing. And that's the one thing we don't do. We don't market. We just talk about what we're enjoying. Does that make any sense to you people? Am I losing you?
No, because that is one of the mysteries for me, how people land here and take the drops and some get it and some don't. Some get lost in the labyrinth of their mind and they cannot understand.
That's right. Sarah's here. Now, Sarah might blast in with something, but let me just continue. Are you still here, Brian?
Yep.
Okay, so we're continuing what you're saying. The fact that Futurama's little green man's name is Croaker, I didn't know that, could go either way. But the fact
that's the thing. It wasn't just that this episode, I'm like, wow, this character, the beast with the billion backs, is based on the YIVO was the name. So it was like Yahweh meets TiVo.
Yeah.
That was the thing. The interactive digital media god was right there in the name of it, you know, YIVO, and then the fact that this other character was revealed that his last name is Croaker, seemed like there were these multiple winks being dropped of like, and also there was a thing about the crew is getting ready for the mission, and the professor comes in and says, like, everyone gather around for your pre-flight coffee enemas.
Which is my main stigma, the Church of Seven Genius.
The coffee enema thing, it seemed like it was multiple winks about, like, it doesn't just resemble the android name. This really is inspired by your pal Bob.
This is what happened to you, Roxy. Brian's state of mind. He's watching this stuff. He said Sir William Thompson, and you just said William Thompson, Roxy. I forgot. That's William Irwin Thompson is referred there. But he's an actual scientist or something, Sir William Thompson, right? Determined the angle of wake.
That's Lord Kelvin. His name was William Thompson.
Okay.
Sir William Thompson is Sir WT. That's an anagram of wrist.
Right. Okay, so we didn't even finish the sentence. The fact that Futurama's little green man's name is Croaker could go either way, but the fact that they chose that episode to have the professor announce pre-flight coffee enemas is too on the nose to deny, right? You go, right? Question mark. That's the trouble with the seams of your gut. It would be sheer sophistry for me to argue that this circumstantial accumulation adds up to a proof of intentional allusion, A-L-L.
in brackets, truthiness is a precise translation of sophistry from Greeky to Englishish, close bracket. But it's easy for even a mild coincidence of that sort to come across as an indisputable wink, especially if one's skeptical immune system is weakened, as mine was when I saw Futurama's BBB in mid-March 2009 in the midst of a powerful and sustained attack of my condition. So it's a good thing that I have, quote, remember Robert Everett Green tattooed on my wrist. Is that true? You had that?
What I'm referencing is what I said during when I was having such powerful and sustained.
Oh, let me read. Wait. You don't need the next part. You explain it. So Robert Everett Green, he wrote the article about me and staying.
Oh, no. Yes. I explained that, but I need to explain the illusion first.
Okay.
That I said with my condition. I think
yes.
That's probably in quotes or something.
Yeah.
What I'm saying during a sustained attack of my condition, referring to this crazy synchronicity confusion. But
yes.
What I'm alluding to is the movie Memento.
Yes.
Where this guy can't form any short-term memories. And
right.
He's always like, have I told you about my condition? Have I told you about my condition? And he has all these tattoos, but the one he has on his wrist is, remember Sammy Jenkins. And it's like, oh, he remembers, oh, right, that guy who blah, blah, blah. And it, like, helps his brain to remember it. So
right.
With me, with my condition, what helps my condition is to remember the Robert Everett Green case.
Yeah, he was a journalist who wrote an article on me and Stang. You can see it somewhere, or maybe Ed has it. It's called Things Get Ugly in the World of Underground Art. And Karen and I had just gone to New York via California. We're at Jerry Fiocca. And the guy actually called me, and he has a quote of me in there. But the name Robert Evergreen is anticipating Robert Neverett. But Robert Neverett was used in 91 by me when we came back to CKLM with Jerry Fiocca. But it wouldn't be in the chart until 1995. But, and of course, Brian knew all this stuff, so he's retrospecting about how the Robert Everett Green, Everett is Bob's other name, and Green is the quadrant that Bob is in. Those are factors you're thinking of, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, the point is that when I read that article, or when I reread that article...
You thought I wrote it.
I became convinced that you wrote it, because... Not only, like, the content of the article seemed like I had a eureka moment where I'm like, wait a minute, Stang comes off as contradictory, Dave comes off as, you know, funny and smart, Bob comes off as interesting, and the author's name is so similar to Bob Neverett Green, it was written by him! It's gotta be! But
yeah, to make me look good.
No,
yes.
It turns out that, no. Even that much accumulation, it seems like it was written by him, and the name seems like a really winky, barely disguised his name. Nope, that was a fucking coincidence, and I didn't believe you at first, when you said you didn't write that. I'm like, no, you wrote that. But nope, that guy was a writer at the paper. It's just a coincidence.
See, Brian did his homework. He knows the state of mind Stang and him got themselves into because he went through it himself.
Yeah.
So here's what you write.
In a homeopathic intense form.
Right. So you have Robert Evergreen tattooed on my wrist. Then you go, remember Robert Evergreen? He wrote the article about the Bosnian ecology controversy, in brackets, things he had ugly in the world of underground art, unquote, that appeared in the Globe and Mail, in bracket, trusty link no longer available. Yes, that was gone. But it has been retrieved by somebody, and we have it on the show, on Ed's site. And ionandbob.com. Then you go, once it had occurred to me to wonder why the author quoted everyone but Bob. I noticed that his name was extremely close to Bob Neverett Dean, and I figured, especially since the two Stang quotes he chose to use contradicted each other, the reasonable voice being Dave Neufeld, end of bracket, and figured that Bob had written it himself. Crucially, when Bob denied this, I wouldn't have believed him if I hadn't gotten used to the increased likelihood of that caliber of coincidence swirling around in Bob's wake. Also, Robert Everett Green's been writing for the Globe Mail ever since. So while a well-timed coffee enema joke might seem to support the intended rhetorical spin of coincidence, I imply not, says Brian, I've seen the meme do much worse with a billion arms tied behind its back. Similarly, just because the anti-slackaholics kept saying they were all butthurt about it doesn't prove that it really was a Dobbs icon. I thought I'd seen that they'd drawn on Roberta's head, dead head for... Yes, you thought you... What? There was a Dobbs head on there, right?
Oh, I don't even know. That,
yeah, in the article they have a Dobbs head.
Yeah, but that was... I wasn't in that thing, I was talking about some other episode of some other TV show.
Okay, because you said just because the anti-slackaholics, that would be Stang's people, anti-slackaholics,
yeah,
kept saying that they were all butthurt about it, doesn't prove, just because they were saying it, doesn't prove that it really was a Dobbs icon. I thought I'd seen that they'd drawn on Roberta's dead forehead. Okay, then you go, now who's Roberta? Is that Robert Everett Green? Who's Roberta? That's in quotes.
It's a reference to the to an episode of a show, Workaholics.
Okay.
I've seen, so that's
right.
Anti-slackaholics.
Right.
But like now that I think of it, that one doesn't. I should have just left that in.
Okay. So then you go. So I thought the week after I started this thread, when the doctor floated his grinning Cobb's head, up next to the logo of the Stangsville Indians to show off the family resemblance. Just because it was the perfect response, not only tying the issue of Stephen Colbert's subgenetic code to alien intrigue, in brackets, in one of the best segments of 2010, Doc Colbert, suggested
yes,
that as the grinning Indian is to white America, so would his face be to our future exo-colonizers, bracketed.
That Indian I'm talking about,
yeah,
is the logo of the Cleveland Indians.
Ah.
That's what I was saying, the Stangsville, you see,
right,
in Cleveland.
Yes.
And the Indians, it sounds like the Deans, it's a silly grinning face.
Right, I see. But giving me an excuse to talk about baseball like I wanted, all of that doesn't prove anything to do with illusionism, A-L-L-U-S. Hence my beef with the otherwise superb book, Dark Mission, The Secret History of NASA. Its authors find the Masonic fetish numbers 33 and 19.5 embedded all over the Apollo missions and beyond, and calculate the astronomical nook improbabilities of their appearance by coincidence, and conclude confidently that each and every one of them was included by deliberate human design. So that's a Masonic embed in NASA. So then the next part is, in other words, they never reckoned with synchronicity, even without the effects of paramedia mutated extranicity. That's not xenochrony, that's extranicity, and android meme xenochrony. It's quite impossible to embark upon such an identity-imperiling mission as going to the moon without experiencing significant synchronistic blowback, which would most likely express itself using whatever symbols bear the heaviest and most relevant psychological investment, in brackets, i.e. user-generated content. I would be absolutely shocked if NASA ritual designers had deliberately programmed all of those hits, a 666-333 ratio of intelligent design synchronistic donation matching is much more hyper-realistic, especially considering how coincidental it is that some of those alignments were even possible to arrange. At a certain point, the alignments cannot be said to have been designed, as opposed to discovered, recognized, and pointed out with perfect pitch, could not have been designed by humans at all, and it's entirely possible some of those hits were programmed unconsciously, making it overwhelmingly likely that the audience whose minds were most blown by Dark Mission were those of the professional superstitions themselves. I mean, consider, quote, the Simon If stories and other works of Aleister Crowley, published this year by the OTO. You hear that, Corbin? On page 194, the seventh line begins, quote, "Oh, the Cass." C-A-S-S. Indeed, this becomes very enthralling, continuing the quote. I was exceedingly intrigued by his monograph on hyperbolic geometry and his, well, wait a minute, was that, yeah, and his criticism of Sir William Thompson's theory of a labile ether. Is that, Crowley wrote that? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, it was, I had picked up, like, the week before I wrote this post, I had picked up a new edition of his short stories, his detective fiction.
Right.
Is this character named Simon If.
Yeah.
And it just happened to be because, you know, this is about these 1947 or 19.5 coincidences. It turned out that on page 194 and seven lines down, so 1947,
yeah,
begins this part that mentions the very scientist who determined that the angle of a wave behind a boat was 19.47.
Wow. So, yeah, the quote is, "Oh, the Cass. Indeed, this becomes very enthralling," says Crowley. "I was exceedingly intrigued by his monograph on hyperbolic geometry and his criticism of Sir William Thompson's theory of a labile ether. A labile ether. It's sort of like trying to say a tactile or something ether." End quote. Then you say, "Any other author/publisher combo I could overlook, but this is clearly by design. Also clearly by design."
another point. The all-too-perfect timing of my out-of-the-blue impulse to wander into the BMV I haven't been in 2 months to check the shelf where this coincidence was affordably sitting in the week after going public with my post above. The Masons have that kind of telethought technology, right? It's obviously statistically impossible by accident, and to think that I could have subconsciously doused it. Well, you'd have to admit that NASA's ritual aligners might have picked one or a few fuse of their launch landing now here's for no more cryptic reason than they just felt right. See, difficult to understand, Brian. And then he says,
well, especially when it's being read out loud.
Yes,
I think it's a little easier to understand when you're reading it in text, but
okay.
I know, you're right.
And then you go, unconvinced, Brian's thinking, you know, he's actually made his point, unconvinced, thankfully the Android meme teaser provided me with even perfect satirical ad absurdum style, in the classical sense, refutation of Hoagland and Bear's probability hypnotism. The same logic proves Masonic ritual manipulation of the 2012 ML baseball season. Major League Baseball season. Firstly, in a year as extraordinary as 2012, the rarest feats were not rare at all and manifested with extra tetrahedral sauce. Not only the first triple crown in 45 years, but with an average of 330 and 44 home runs, not only a perfect game, but for the first time ever, three of them. Three times, three by three batters retired. And the triple crown winner is a tiger. And according to Dark Mission, the famous face on Mars is half human, half feline. And according to the rock star from Mars, Charlie Sheen, his mutant superpower was his tiger blood. And according to his doctors, Mars McLuhan, Mars was the nickname his brother had for him, Mars McLuhan only survived through middle age because his face had mutated itself some tiger-style blood roots. And the Triple Crown Tiger's initials are MC. Cheers! And the most famous MC from Detroit is Marshall Eminem Mathers. Note the post-Masonically potent surname. And the fact that NASA talk-blocked McLuhan's 100th birthday last year by landing their own space shuttle all over his mass media memorial airtime is made more sinister by the legal fact that M&M is owned by Mars, not the other way around. And it is on this richly multi-contextual ground, that's good, multi-contextual, every spectator of the 2012-ness should familiarize themselves with the gourmet paranoid pattern recognition at goroadachi.com. If only for Goro's potent alternate analysis of the felinity of Mars' face. But if you think Terence McKenna's time wave theory is far out, you really need to know about GA's time rivers. That's, who's GA?
Goro Adachi.
Okay, Goro Adachi's time rivers, a leading candidate for the greatest coincidence ever sold. So all that, and it is only this richly
giant parentheses.
Yeah, giant parentheses. It is only this richly multi-contextual ground that Toronto's triple play figures so vividly. : The Toronto Blue Jays get their first triple play in 33 years, said the News on April 23rd. To which I, along with every other fan of the Golden Age Toronto Blue Jays, to which I reacted, quote, not counting the one we were robbed of in the first World Series game ever played outside of the States. That is. Unquote.
Okay, let me cut in for a second, because this part is pretty coherent story, but it's not written very well. This was the thing that happened in 2012 that, like, the Android meme handed me. I was formulating this thought about my criticism of the basic idea of Dark Mission, where they're like, well, you know, at the exact time of the launch of this mission and at the place of the launch, Sirius was 19 and a half degrees above the horizon of Earth. And then when that launch landed at the spot where it landed, Sirius was also 19 and a half degrees above that spot on Mars. That can't be a coincidence. They keep listing all these things where it's like 33 or 19 and a half degrees and like Orion's belt and Sirius or the sun. And they have an impressively long list of them. And I mean, assuming they're not just wrong or making them up. Assuming those alignments are actually there, you know, they take the seemingly reasonable position that it's absolutely impossible that that could happen just by coincidence. The clustering of that, not only the same number, but a number that is religiously important to the people that are doing the missions, that they're saying, clearly this proves that that's all intentionally designed. And for me, my experience of synchronicity tells me that No, I'm pretty sure that if they designed, they could have only designed even only a third of them, and the other two-thirds of them, they are learning about it now from you, and they are flabbergasted. But the point is, the Android meme hand, I was mulling over this idea, and the Android meme handed me the perfect example to prove it.
Wow.
And this has happened numerous times where I'm talking about it. It's like I'm trying to write the thing and the meme is too eagerly, here's a perfect coincidence to lead in. Here's a perfect example of what you're thinking of. Here's a great example you can't leave out of your essay. And, and the thing fell apart under the pressure. But anyway, the point is what happened in 2012, listening to the news, and they say, the Toronto Blue Jays got their first triple play in 33 years today. And the thing is, right, and so the first time that in the statistical books, the Toronto Blue Jays got a triple play. But the thing is, when we were in the World Series for the first time, we got a triple play in one of those games.
Yeah.
But the umpire made a bad call at the end, called the guy safe. There was a huge stink about it because the replay made it obvious we'd gotten it. A triple play in the World Series is hugely rare and a big deal, and we were really pissed that we got robbed of that. So that's what I'm saying, where I'm like, me and every other fan of the Golden Age Jays were like, oh, yeah, maybe it's the first triple play in 33 years if you don't count that other one that we got. So then I'm thinking, wait a minute, how long ago was that? And I figured it out. It was this other triple play we didn't get.
Yeah.
They said it was the first triple play in 33 years, officially. The one that we didn't get had been 19 and a half years to the day before that happened. So that was, I'm like, oh, well, okay, Hoagland and Barra, I guess I just proved that ISIS or the Masons are controlling the details of Major League Baseball, according to your thesis, or synchronicities happen.
Or Bob's in charge, because this would be, and it's important we're going through this, because you've explained your new interpretation of ION, your new appreciation. So I'm saying, ION was going strong in 2012, you were aware of it. Ion was talking to you, and you're non-physical, so to speak, was talking to you, saying, look at all this stuff, support Bob's case. Ion was go for anybody to support Bob's case. So you were being helped, and you now could probably understand that better today because you've come to appreciation of Ion or how you could begin to interact with Ion. So that's irrelevant.
Last week you were telling me your insights on how you thought you created the hologram and how you programmed
it.
Maybe you would
Well, Brian, I think I was talking to somebody about it. Technically, we one day will be able to make our whole life programmed by some part of ourselves. We'll program a whole world that you'll be living in. And you'll be Marilyn Monroe if you want to. You'll relive whatever you're interested in, and you'll be it. I imagine we will get to that level of programming our matrix, just like everybody's talked about the kid who thought he lived all these things going on, and he was 14 years old in a matrix tube, right? And none of it was happening from the chemical body. Okay, so if we can program ourselves, then Ion, when he talks to you, Brian, he has to, since he covers all the span of your being, which is eternal, he would have to talk to the Brian that programmed a whole bunch of stuff in your being. You know what I mean? You create your own reality, so to speak.
Yeah.
Hologramically. And Ion's talking about that. So then I realized, oh, this whole thing, Bob's, he's right. Bob did control the 20th century and did all this stuff. Because he says that Carolyn was many people in the Bible. Well, that would be in Bob's Bible, right? Where we'd make ourselves be the characters. So this huge narcissistic self-programming that's coming to us. I mean, it's predicted by Wired magazine, 20 years ago, that people would be doing this. That whole situation may be what I have actually done. And that's why all this shit is falling in my lap, because we are all in the World Series of whose hologram gets to occupy the public attention. That would be Xenocrity in a way, that I'm a super champion of that, and everybody has been following my hologram for like 200 years now. You know
exactly.
What I mean? That's what Roxy's talking about. And I started to realize a new level of what Ion has to address. If he's talking to all your possible experiences and giving you non-physical's view of it, he has to include, they have to include that part of your future where you are creating huge holograms of yourself and competing with other holograms and getting the most shares of controlling interest.
Right. Right.
And this is
the
a good
most
example of
likes.
The most slack, right. And
no,
so
the
Brian,
most slack on the most likes.
Oh, the most likes. Right, right. The most likes. L-I-K-E-S. Yes. And the thing is that Brian's been engaging me dangerously since November 24th, 2003, when he came to my talk. Is that the first time I met you, Brian? That talk?
No, it was in 2002 in New York in November.
Oh, well. You and Sam came. That's right. Yeah, that was.
Yeah.
There's 11/22 right there, November 2002. I just quit Nelson.
Yes.
So
yeah.
Nelson Tall. So the Brian's been lost in my hologram for 13 years. No wonder he's getting this stuff happening to him.
It
could
yeah,
be a case
starting,
I would
starting
make.
It's starting to really congeal now.
It's like this is the hidden ground of all this stuff is Bob's in court proving that he was in charge, and I'm citing ad absurdum your postings as an example of someone whipped up into my batter.
Well, this is the important point that I might as well just go on the record.
Oh,
right
okay,
now.
Brian. Just to sum up,
yeah.
The reason the Blue Jays won the fucking World Series in 1993 is that Carol and I had left Toronto
year. It was because Neufeld made the album.
That's right, the album too.
It was because 92 and 93 were the years that Toronto won the Culture Wars with Bob Media
right.
College.
Right, and so they won the World Series.
That's what I said.
So then I moved to New York, and that winter, New York City, which never won nothing in the NHL for decades, won the Stanley Cup because Bob was in New York.
Yeah, you kept it away.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that, by the way, I because of that whole thing about why I think that they won the World Series those 2 years, that's why I have to... I have to predict, as much as I don't want to, that the Jays are not going to win the World Series this year. You know, I think they're going to get there. It's the 22 years since then, but
yeah.
I mean, I have not made a Bob album, so if I'm winning the Culture Wars somehow by engaging with you properly, then, you know, that'll be enough to get us there. But all these other, there's been a lot of, I'm trying to read the omens, the Android memes omens. I'm
right.
Trying to read them better this year than I did last year. I can see how I got fooled into thinking the Jays were going to the World Series last year, where the sign was actually, the same sign I thought I was reading for the Jays was actually that the San Francisco was going to win, even though it looked like last year was the year of Royals, the big song Royals.
Yes.
So then when the Royals got to the World Series, it seemed like a no-brainer that they'd win. It's the year of Royals. But
yeah.
No, this other sign had been telling me the Giants, but I hadn't read it right. So this year I'm trying to read them right and get my what I want out of the way. And what I want for the Jays to win them all, but I don't think they're going to. So I'm predicting right now the Jays will get to the World Series and then lose it. Hopefully to the Mets, because that seems to be John Stewart's retirement present from the meme, that the Mets are doing well. So I want them to win it all.